This is Long Story Short from the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. I'm Ebon Udama. 26 years after a devastating Long Island Sound lobster die-off, Connecticut lobstermen reflect on their loss.
There's just sort of widespread bitterness about the die-off. Most of the lobstermen think that the pesticides were the cause, and they also hold a lot of grudges against the politicians who they don't think were supporting them and the scientists whose explanations they disagree with.
That's Dana Edwards, a former visuals fellow with the Connecticut Mirror. He did a deep dive into how Connecticut's few remaining commercial lobstermen are keeping the tradition alive following a devastating lobster die-off that decimated the Long Island Sound lobster industry in 1999. More to come after this.
With a podcast out there on whatever you're into, the news of the day may not always be your first choice. I get it. But with the WSHU podcast, After All Things, you'll be up to speed on the latest from Connecticut and Long Island in less than 15 minutes. So you can stay informed and get back to listening to what you love. Listen to After All Things with me, Sabrina Garone, weeknights wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, Dana.
Hi, Ebon.
As a visuals reporter, what got you interested in telling this story? Was it the allure of going out on the Sound on a fishing boat?
Yeah, that was definitely part of it. I actually spent part of my childhood living on a sailboat, so I've always been interested in being on the water. But another entryway I had into this story is that I was new to Connecticut as a visuals fellow this past summer at the Connecticut Mirror. And so I was exploring some waterfront towns. I tried a couple lobster rolls for research purposes, of course. And I learned there's this famously the Connecticut style of lobster roll, but I learned that most of the lobster that's now inside of those rolls is imported from Maine or Canada. And that in fact, there are hardly any lobsters left in Long Island Sound. So that was sort of an aha moment for me. I thought, what happened to the lobsters and to the lobstermen? Another angle I had into this story is I was introduced to Roddy Grimshaw, who's one of the state's last remaining commercial lobstermen in Stonington. And I just found it to be a fascinating and frankly tragic story about, you know, what used to be a really thriving industry in Long Island Sound that was decimated in the late 90s by a historic die-off of the lobsters. It's been a tough journey for the lobstermen since then. There's been coverage of the, you know, struggles that the industry has faced, but I wanted to dive a bit deeper and add a visual angle to it as a photojournalist as well as a writer.
Let's talk a little bit about the die-off itself. There's been a lot of research done into this. What was responsible for the die-off, and did it pretty much kill off the entire industry?
Yeah, it might be interesting to kind of walk you through what people found out in real time, because it was sort of an unprecedented mystery at the time, right? And so in 1998, that was the peak of lobster landings in Long Island Sound and in Connecticut as well. There were 10 million pounds of lobster that were hauled in that year. And then suddenly, in the fall of 1999, in August, dead and sort of sickly lobsters started washing up onto the Sound. Then there was a huge storm that hit. It was Tropical Storm Floyd in September of 1999. It rained about 12 inches. And after that, within just a matter of a week or so, lobstermen were pulling up almost no lobsters at all, and the ones that were pulling up were dead or dying. And so at first, scientists really did not know what was going on at all, but there was a suspicion that pesticides were the cause, because just a month before that tropical storm that washed so much water into the Sound, the states of New York and Connecticut had begun applying pesticides to combat West Nile virus. And because mosquitoes, which the pesticides are designed to kill, are related to lobsters, that's why people call lobsters bugs, people suspected that the pesticides killed the lobsters. There was a bunch of money that came in from the federal government to fund research into the causes of the disaster. And after a few years, they found out the primary causes were a crustacean disease, a parasitic amoeba called paramebiasis, and that the warming waters due to global warming were also a large contributing factor, because lobsters are extremely sensitive to warm waters. And so that had weakened their immune systems, making them even more vulnerable to the disease. They determined that the pesticides never reached lethal levels in several modeling exercises.
But also, there's a contention that there was a boom in the lobster industry in Connecticut, and that had been enabled by the fact that the fishermen were actually feeding the lobsters. So there was, in the late 1980s into the 90s, there was just a real boom in the number of lobsters that were caught in Long Island Sound, which was not traditionally the case.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, so that was an additional factor. Researchers referred to a, quote, perfect storm of factors that led to this die-off. And just as you mentioned, the lobstering practices in the 80s and 90s, lobstermen referred to farming and harvesting the lobster rather than catching them. That's because, you know, they're using these pots or traps in which they put bait, which is, you know, various kinds of fish that are caught through other means. But they're putting a ton of fish into these pots. And that represents a huge supplement to the natural food source of the lobsters. And so it actually artificially increased the lobster population in Long Island Sound significantly. So there were far more lobsters on the seafloor than there had ever been. Which is a little bit counterintuitive. You might think that, you know, as these lobster hauls were increasing, they were depleting the population. What they were actually doing was increasing it, but they were increasing it in a way where they were harvesting lobsters when they were young, you know, as soon as they reached the minimum size that was required by regulation. And so you had this extremely crowded conditions on the seafloor, and they were mostly young lobsters. And the biologists think that those made the lobsters even more susceptible to the die-off, because they were young, and they were, you know, the disease could just spread really quickly through those crowded conditions.
Now, you talked to the few lobstermen remaining. What happened to, because it was a pretty large industry at one time in Connecticut. There were a lot of Connecticut ports had lobster fishermen from Greenwich all the way up to Stonington.
So, you know, in the years after the die-off, it was this very sudden event, but it wasn't like, you know, immediately the industry was not viable. The population would ebb and flow a bit for years, but it was trending significantly down. You know, some years would be a bit better, and that biologists think that has a lot to do with years when the water was a bit cooler, because the lobsters really just cannot tolerate warm water. So when the conditions were a bit better, you know, lobstermen were still able to, you know, make something of a living. But on the whole, most of them were no longer able to support themselves lobstering, because it just trended significantly downwards. I mean, in 2024, the lobster catch in Connecticut was only 5% of what it was at its peak in 1998. So most of the lobstermen were forced to leave the fishing docks behind entirely. You know, some of them switched to clamming or catching conch, the shells, or fishing. But it's hard to say percentage wise, but it seems like the vast majority just had to leave, you know, fishing behind entirely. And it was an extremely difficult transition. I spoke to a social scientist named Tarsila Ciara, who studied the social impacts of the die-off and the impacts on the kind of fishing culture. And it really is a tragic story. There were a lot of people who struggled with alcoholism and drug abuse. And, you know, the government put in place various job retraining programs, but they were not well received by the lobstermen. And there's just sort of widespread bitterness about the die-off. Most of the lobstermen think that the pesticides were the cause, and they also hold a lot of grudges against the politicians who they don't think were supporting them, and the scientist whose explanations they disagree with.
So the bottom line, are we ever going to have a viable lobster industry on Long Island Sound?
It looks extremely unlikely. In my reporting, in my story, the sort of state's last commercial lobstermen who I profiled, they're operating up in Stonington. That's really the last active commercial lobster fleet in the state. And they're not even full-time. Most of them go out a couple days a week, and then they augment that with fishing. And the reason that they're still able to catch lobster up in Stonington is that they're just outside of the Sound, and the water is slightly cooler there. And it wasn't hit as hard by the die-off in the late 90s and following years. So there's still some lobster up there, right? All the way near the Rhode Island border. But deeper into the Sound, all the former lobstermen I spoke with, some of them will still put out some traps from time to time just to see what's out there, and they're not catching anything. They're a tiny fragment of what, you know, what there used to be. So the scientific consensus is that the waters have just gotten too warm. Even though this disease epidemic has passed, the American lobster just cannot tolerate the bottom temperatures due to global warming. And historically, Long Island Sound was the southernmost end of the inshore range of the American lobster. So now it seems that moved north, and you know, it may soon be the case that the southernmost tip is Massachusetts.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Dana.
Thank you, Ebong. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Long Story Short is hosted by me, Ebong Udama, and produced by Molly Ingram. Harriet Jones is our editor, WSHU's Alicia Daddario and the Connecticut Mirror's Gabby DeBenedictis are our digital team. This podcast is a collaboration between the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. We go behind the scenes at the home of public policy journalism in Connecticut. More can be found online at ctmirror.org and wshu.org. Our episodes can be found wherever you get your podcasts.